KUJZ is 95.3 The Score.
I hope you're ready. It's that time.
This is going to be cool.
Climb aboard for the radio ride known as Sports Talk.
A day that will live in sports radio infamy.
Brought to you by Guarantee RV.
We're talking the big deal, the real deal.
On Highway 99 in Junction City. Online at GuaranteeRV.com.
I am not only drinking the Kool-Aid, I'm the manufacturer.
I am losing my mind.
Tannen, it might be semi-circle time.
Hi, I'm Steve, and, well, I brought a list.
And now, a guy with tons and tons of issues.
Yeah, I kind of do have issues.
And broadcasting them, searching for answers.
Yeah, what the hell are we doing?
It's Steve Tannen.
Hey, folks. Welcome to Sports Talk on a Tuesday. 95.3 The Score. As we were about to, open the microphones and do a radio show, I'm coughing and Nick's like, don't die. And my first thought was, he doesn't want to do two shows in a row by himself.
You're damn right.
Had nothing to do with looking out for my health or any level of concern. It was the most self-serving comment ever.
Doing the show today, too, would have been rough because I don't have anything prepared. I did What Are You Doing, and that's the only content that I've got for today. I can't talk about the NHL and the guy who said shot chart and turned it into a funny word.
Out of the contest.
Yeah, I'm done. Can I get the rest of the week off? I did one show today.
It's exhausting, isn't it?
It's above and beyond any regular duty that I would do here at work.
Tell you what. Do a three-hour show every day for 21 years. I think people take it for granted. They think radio and stuff we do happens by magic. It's work. It's fun work. I wouldn't trade it for anything, but it's a commitment. It's hours and hours and hours and hours of work.
Yeah, plus you have me to bounce things off of, where right now I'm talking and you're not. I had nothing. I was locked in this room. Nobody even walked by. Yesterday, like I
not even to make fun of you.
No, nobody.
That's
came,
disappointing.
Nobody came by. Nobody did like a funny laugh to try and mess me up while I was getting emotional talking about Kobe and his daughter and the rest of the families that passed in the accident. None of that even happened. Like I don't even know if anybody was here
for about 90 days in 1998. I did Monday and Friday Sports Talk. It was on public radio. It was an hour and a half. Now, if you're familiar with public radio, they don't have 3 or 4 minute commercial breaks. You get like a minute and a half. They're called underwriters. And this hour of public broadcasting is brought to you by whatever. Top of the hour, you go to the top of the hour, you play the ID, maybe 30 seconds of music, and I was working full time. So I would do two shows, and by the way, it was just me. 90 minutes, public radio, answering phones on the air. That's the most I've ever worked in my life.
Oh, we got off to a roaring start yesterday. Took my.
Yeah, what's the milk story I haven't heard about?
Oh, boy. So I'm taking calls. I kind of did my open. I talked about you weren't here. I did all this stuff, and I was just kind of like in this panic that, oh, no, I've talked about everything now. How long have I been on the air? I think I've been talking 3 hours. Oh, it was 6. And so we get a couple calls, and some people are like, oh, this is really tough. I don't know what to say or do. And I'm like, I feel you. And we get this call from Eddie. And Eddie and I, obviously have to do the, hey, you're live on the air. Who is this? And he's kind of like mumbling and grumbling. And somebody texted in and said, I thought it was Fred doing a voice. And I was like, no, I don't think Fred would mess with me like that. But this guy sounded.
What does milk have to do with anything?
Well, he's going through his call and he's mumbling. And I'm like, who is this? He's like, it's Eddie. He's groceries and milk. And I was just like, I think you called the wrong number here. So somebody called in, I think, trying to get in contact with somebody else, maybe, and was reading off their grocery list. But that was like 10 minutes into the show. I thought I was getting crank calls from people that were just messing with me. Or this guy just, he dialed the wrong number and happened to be live on the radio. It was an interesting moment, for sure.
It's a new one. So, apparently when you opened, you offered an explanation for my absence. And because I got two different texts on my phone that all it said was procedure.
No, it was medical procedure. I didn't want to put your business out there. I wasn't sure what you were telling people. I didn't want to broadcast that
to the
greater Willamette Valley about things that were going on in your private, personal life. It's not for me to talk about.
I understand, but I don't know if you realized how much of a laugh you actually gave people. And I'll tell you what. As somebody who I will knock on every piece of wood between here and home.
You missed that one.
I'm 59 years old. I had my tonsils out when I was not even 5, so that's 1964. I underwent this medical procedure back in 2012 and yesterday. Those are the only 3 times I've been in a hospital. Huh. I had to go to the emergency ward a couple times playing ball. I broke my thumb. I broke my nose. But, you know, those are not conditions where it's like, oh, my God, you've been tested. You need to come in. And what I've learned is the people who I dealt with and who took care of me are awesome. Our healthcare system sucks guava jelly, and I hate everyone involved in it. And B, those of you who in all seriousness, have like ailments that you have to deal with and you have to go in to doctors and hospitals and undergo procedures and be numbed and have anesthesia. Wow. That is something else. You know what? Sometimes the biggest cliche in the world is a cliche because it's just, you know, well, the sun will come up tomorrow. It's gonna.
It did it.
And
wow.
If you don't have your health, man, it doesn't matter. There's no money. There's no looks. There's no nothing that's gonna make up for it. And for those of you who have to deal with this on a semi-regular basis, hey, I am sorry. You have my respect. You have my heart. And I just wish you well. Because what I had to do was go in a little early, and then you have to get put under. It's a base. You know, my dad actually brought up one of the great lines of all time, who said, minor surgery happens to other people. And so they're like, okay. And all of a sudden I have a good ability to kind of brain lock. I had my Sports Illustrated with me and I'm reading, okay, you're ready. And then I realize, I'm going to be going under anesthesia within the next 4 minutes. I really hope I come out of this. I'm telling you, I had that one about 10 seconds of, one never knows, does one? And then the next thing I knew, I was up and was like, okay. But man, for those of you who consistently have to deal with your insurance company and the medical profession and paying and arguing with insurance and who's going to cover what and what your insurance covers, it's got to be frigging exhausting. And that's the kind of stuff, you know what? That's the kind of stuff that makes you sick. You don't sleep right, aggravation, misery. Good God. But knock on wood, I feel fine. As you could tell, I'm still here.
Did they do the anesthesia properly for you? Because I've only been under once. It was to get my wisdom teeth removed. And when I got...
Did they knock you out or just numb you?
No, they knocked me out.
Oof.
You can get either. So they can... I think they still do the Novocaine and stuff in your mouth just to double make sure that the pain isn't going to wake you up or anything. But I had a friend of mine also in high school. He's like, for some reason, I don't know what it was, but he didn't go under. He was awake the whole time, and they had him like super numbed up on Novocaine. And he was like, I felt one of the teeth pop out. And he's just
I would never even wash again. I would just curl up in a ball.
I think it was something like it didn't hurt, but he's like, I could feel the release of it coming out. And I was just like, oh no, I'm very glad I went under for that. But when I went under and they gave me anesthesia. I was sitting in the chair of the not the orthodontist, the dental place or whatever, the oral surgeon. Right. And I'm sitting in the chair and I'm waiting and they got the little mask on my nose and they're blah, blah, blah. And I'm just like, I think I should start feeling sleepy by now. Nothing's kind of happening. Like, this is kind of taking a while. And the doctor comes in. He's like, oh, you're still awake. What's going on here? And he checks the little the nozzle on the anesthesia, like the gas thing or whatever. He's right. like, oh, this was almost not even on. And he like cranks it up to kind of catch up with me to get to where I should have been. And like within 3 seconds, I woke up with a mouthful of cotton and I felt like I'd just been hit by a truck.
I'll tell you what, one thing I've learned, and maybe I watch too much Grey's Anatomy and yes. shows like that where it's very dramatic and you know, you see a surgeon having an argument with like their wife or their husband or, you know, their kids, and then they're angry and distracted and they walk in to perform surgery. I'm like, whoa.
Wait, yep.
So they're asking me how I am. So to my nurse who's giving me the IV, to my anesthesiologist and doctor, I swear to God, I said, how are you guys doing today? Everything okay? You know, your portfolio all right? You know, the IRS not after you? All your relationship, you're kind of focused on this? And it's like nothing personal, but I need a good 40 minutes out of you right here, right now. I need your A game. Nothing personal, but the rest of the people, it's their responsibility to keep you on your A game. I'm not even kidding. I mean, I might be embellishing a little, but I spoke to all three of them individually, looked them in the eye. So how are you doing? Everything okay?
How you doing?
You all focused?
How you doing?
And I use that word. And let me tell you something. I would assume for dentists and doctors, you know, who pull teeth, and an anesthesiologist who puts you, I mean, how many people do they put under? Do they work 225? Do they put under 1,000 people? So, you know, if somebody gets sick or has something bad to happen and you're the only one of 1,000, that's a great batting average, except for you. So, I did the kind of, you know how you point two eyes to your eyes and two eyes to theirs? I was very much kind of like, hey, how you doing? Yeah, attention time. Hi, me here. Focus.
I might be unconscious and my eyes won't be working, but I'm watching you.
So I made it. Guess I get to see 60. All right, 284-8571. What?
That sentence was just incredibly depressing. I guess I'll get to see 60.
Yep, that's been my, you know, actually, now that as you get older, it's like, you know, you talk about your goals, maybe financial, career wise. Now it's like, at 59, what's your primary goal? 60. Everything else, if I don't achieve that one, you know, paying off the car, lowering the mortgage, getting to travel, probably going to fall by the wayside. All right, 284-8571, the Oregon fuel injection hotline. You know, last week I mentioned this ridiculous segment of the schedule the Blazers were hitting and our theory of never think it can't get worse. But, you know, that was a nice win to beat the Pacers. I want to talk about that. I also want to talk about the Oregon women and the Oregon men's basketball teams, who had critically important, successful, outstanding weekends. The Beavs going on the road for the first time during the Graves era, and first time since 2010, a whole decade, and knocking off that really good Oregon State team up at Gill. After taking care of business at home on Friday before a packed house, the Oregon men, after double OTing USC on Thursday, really put the hammer down and crushed UCLA 96-75. By the way, two things. The most points given up of the obviously short reign of Mick Cronin as the Bruin coach, and the biggest margin of victory in the history of Oregon beating UCLA ever. So, yeah, times change, tides turn. And, of course, it's Super Bowl week, And like we discussed very much in the first hour and the dominating story in this sports/news cycle, the helicopter crash, which took the lives of 9 people, including Kobe Bryant and his 13-year-old daughter, John Altobelli, regarded as a legendary baseball coach, now at Orange Coast College. He died along with his wife, Carrie, daughter Alyssa. There were other victims, Christina Mauser, Sarah Chester, Peyton Chester, Ara Zubayan, who I believe was the pilot. And doing the pregame show on Sunday leading up to Oregon-UCLA starting at 1 o'clock, I was heading back from the grocery store when the phone rang in my car. I get 12 calls a year in my car. First of all, I'm not in my car a lot. I have a 10-minute trip. So when I'm leaving, I basically am, and I've got Bluetooth. For anybody in the enforcement arena, I did not answer it. I just hit the Bluetooth on my steering wheel. And being a rocket scientist, I hit don't take call and then hung it up. My wife called back. Is this true? And I'm like, I what do you mean? She's like, I heard Kobe Bryant died in a helicopter crash. And I'm like, I had been coming from Freddy's on West 11th down Seneca, making the left on Roosevelt, and I'm in that neighborhood. I'm like, I'll be home in 2 minutes. And so I'm driving like, that can't be. This. And if you notice, a lot of people were of the opinion of, oh, this is so typical 2020. Somebody heard about this, and they got to jump to conclusions. And by the time I got in my front door from, you know, the reliable news outlets, confirmation on Twitter, the people who cover the NBA, and you're like, whoa. I mean, I remember, and Nick will attest to the fact that I'm not the type of person who walks into a room and sits down. I'm very wandery.
I think if you could pick up the microphone that is
just wander around.
Yeah, if it wasn't anchored to this gigantic table board here, you would be walking everywhere.
I would.
Yeah.
And when I'm on the phone,
oh, you're the worst.
I wander around. I mean, I'll tell you what, I get my steps in. So I walked into the house and I just sat down in a chair. And I was like, just wait a second here. Try and absorb this and try to figure out exactly what had happened. And it doesn't make sense. And first, you know, the problem with celebrities who travel by helicopter and private jet is you don't realize the magnitude. I remember this happened when Payne Stewart died. God, it's got to be going back now, what, 18, 19 years. And he was in a private jet. And I, at the time, remember reading articles and they were talking about the percentage of PGA golfers who travel from event to event. And by the way, this is 18 years ago. Now I'm sure it's more because the money is so much more substantial. And you see a lot of these guys, what is it called? Yanjet is a sponsor, and that's the private jet. And, you know, business executives, celebrities, wealthy people who don't, especially in major cities in Texas and, you know, Houston, Texas and New York and L.A., who for most of us, it's like, across town, it's going to be 45 minutes or an hour. They could just zoom, zoom, zoom. And for these poor people, think about it. They wake up in the morning and they're able to participate in an event like this. And for the Chesters and the Altobellis, so what are you doing today? We have a game. We were invited by Kobe and his daughter to fly with them in their private helicopter. And that happens. And your heart just falls out of your chest. So I was on the air when we learned that it wasn't just Kobe and 4 others. We learned it was his 13-year-old daughter. And Bethany, who produces a lot of our pregame shows for football and basketball, she was the one who kind of broke the news to me, because I could just see the heartbreak and horror in her eyes, because she asked, do we know if the daughter was there? Because there was an unfortunate amount of two and two. We knew where he was going to the Mamba Academy. We knew his daughter played, but were they all there already? And then, of course, the horror of the news hits. And then it went from bad to worse. I mean, it's not bad enough that five people perished. And then you learned, oh, by the way, the National Transportation and Safety Board is now saying there were nine people involved. And if you listen to the pregame show on Sunday, I was many times just had to take a deep breath. If it wasn't for the fact that I had pre-recorded a conversation about UCLA with their play-by-play man, Josh Lewin, I don't know if I was going to be able to just talk normally about basketball through the entirety of a half-hour pregame show. And I'll elaborate on some of the questions people had in a bit. Right now, let's take a couple of phone calls. Let's get to the Oregon Fuel Injection Hotline and bring in Ron. Ron, good afternoon. How's it going?
Hey, Steve. It's going good. How you doing?
All right. What's up?
I got a baseball question. Are the players that benefited in the sign-stealing scandal going to be suspended? And if so, how long do you think they should be suspended for?
They're off the hook. I think that's over already. The decision's been made. Cora's been fired. The commissioner handed down the suspensions to the GM of the Astros, Lunau, and the manager, Hinch. They got fired. The Mets decided to fire Beltran before he managed the day. As we speak there's no plan to penalize the players because they can't prove which players were involved. And then if they went after certain players without evidence, then you got to deal with the powerful union.
Wow. I don't think that's right. I think they should suspend Altuve and the rest of the Astros.
Well, but you got to provide the evidence. You can't just say suspend them.
Okay. Well, not fair.
All right, take it easy. Yeah, a lot of times in a case like this, you go for the big dog because we saw Altuve with his finger, you know, don't rip my shirt off. He looked guilty of sin, but where's the evidence? Do we know what Correa benefited? So the fact that the players got off, if you've noticed, if you're reading in between the lines, a lot of other players are pissed off. This is kind of the Peds deal where everybody has played, where a lot of people played the, well, everybody was doing it. And a lot of players are like, whoa, no, I'm not friends with that guy. My relationship with him deteriorated. I've known him since the minor leagues. He can go screw off as far as I'm concerned. There's no everybody, nobody, everything, nothing that's applicable to either of these circumstances. All right, one more call before a break to the Oregon Fuel Injection Hotline. Let's bring in Leon. Leon, good evening. Thanks for calling. How you doing?
Oh, not half bad. I thought I'd call in with a couple of amusing anecdotes concerning dentistry. You don't think of dental work and humor very much together, but when I was 16, last time I ever had laughing gas, I'm laying there, I'm numbed up, feeling good. I'm just relaxed, high as balls, and laying back, and all of a sudden I feel like I'm going to get sick. I just start feeling weird in the stomach. Now I'm laying back in the chair. I got the assistant on one side. I got the dentist on the other side. I'm numb. I'm high. And I can't move. I realize I'm just like, I'm breathing, and that's all I can do. And I'm trying desperately to tell my dentist, please take this mask off. I'm going to get sick. And I couldn't move. I couldn't talk. And, of course, it happened. I threw up on my
mouth.
Oh, it was a nightmare.
I
haven't had gas
since. And you're,
however.
I was going to say, you're going to get to the funny part, right?
Well, the funnier part is the next trip was about, this next story was about 10 years ago. I had an older dentist, wonderful guy, cheap, I could afford him, but he was about probably in his early 60s-ish, and he had diabetes, and he tended to get a little sleepy at the end of the day. And so here I am, he looks at my tooth, he's going to do something, and he looks at it and goes, okay, I think you'll be fine, we'll just do a quick whatever. Then he looks at me again and goes, no, I think we'll have to give you a shot. So he gives me a shot. 5 minutes goes by. Yeah, I think we're going to do one more. I'm like, okay. So I'm later, he gives me another shot. 5 minutes goes by. The guy's like, yeah, I think we'll do one more. And I'm like, okay, this is getting a little strange. So he reaches in. I'm already numb, of course. I have two shots. I can't feel a darn thing. Not on gas, of course. And all of a sudden, he kind of like jerks back, and he's like, oh, that's a bleeder. Not what you want to hear when you're sitting there numbed
up. Thanks a lot, Doc.
Yeah, so I'm like, and he gets up and walks away, and so I'm like tonguing, you know, my gum, like, would he, and I can't taste anything. Doesn't feel like there's any blood in my mouth. I'm like, not sure what he's talking about. The dude stabbed himself in the hand with a needle.
Wow.
What you want your dentist to do, be operating on your face with a numb hand.
Well, you also don't want to be sitting in the middle of a Carol Burnett sitcom. That's like
that's what it felt like.
Corbin,
it was very slapstick. I was just glad that I wasn't on the gas, because imagine me throwing up on my dentist as he's stabbing himself in the thumb. That would have been hilarious.
Wow. That's a good one, Leon. I think. All right. 284-8571. The Oregon Fuel Injection Hotline. If you want to jump on in, feel welcome. Otherwise, let's take a break. We'll be back with a Coors Light update and more sports talk. 95.3, The Score.
Sports Talk, sponsored in part by Guarantee RV Supercenters, the first and only RV dealership to offer service 7 days a week. Big city selection and country savings. Visit them online at Guarantee.com.
At the WNBA All-Star Game, they were sitting courtside, and of course everybody wanted to have their moment. I didn't quite know when to go up, but we happened to be shooting on that side at halftime when he was sitting there with Gigi, and they knew who I was, and that really shocked me. And she just talked about how excited she was to be here.
Yeah, that was former Stanford superstar, Team USA member who was in town for that game, and we were fortunate enough to have on the show. L.A. Sparks player, WNBA union president Nneka Ogumike on meeting Kobe and his daughter. As we welcome you back, Sports Talk 95.3, The Score. It's the Tuesday edition of the show. I wasn't here yesterday. You all had a chance to chat with Nick, what I would refer to as the day after. And couple of things that I don't get when something like this happens. When people try, I think, to bend over backwards to make a point or to ask a question that they know the answer to because it's in the job description or history or everything they've observed or basic common logic. And I saw on not a lot of texts and some on Twitter, on social media, various forms of communication, some of the sports talk shows I listened to ever since the news horrifically was confirmed about that helicopter crash that claimed 9 victims. Christina Mauser, Sarah Chester, Peyton Chester, Ara Zabayan, John Altobelli, a baseball coach who was the dad of JJ, who played shortstop here for 2010, 11, and 12 with the Ducks, his wife Carrie, his daughter Alyssa, and Kobe Bryant and his 13-year-old daughter Gianna. And it's why when something like this happens, does it get such big worldwide attention, but when a police officer or a fireman dies in the line of duty, it doesn't. And it's like, are you crazy asking a question like that? First of all, the brotherhood of firemen and police officers, I mean, when there's a funeral and they all come out, they get a hero's send-off, and deservedly so. But they're public servants. No one ever took the test at the police academy or worked and went through the ranks of the local fire department so that they could make $32 million a year and become an international celebrity. It's not a job that you get into or seek, or a calling that seeks fame, fortune, and celebrity. Is that really difficult for a lot of people to understand? Nobody's comparing the contribution or the value of a job like that to somebody who could catch a touchdown pass, throw a 2-2 off speed pitch and freeze a 300 hitter, or to hit a clutch 22-foot fadeaway. No, nobody ever does that, ever. Just, it's a bad take. It's an awful take. And when you achieve that level of celebrity, well, think about it right now. If on Saturday somebody told you the active current athletes in the world, start listing them, who are the biggest names? You know, internationally, they probably would go with Ronaldo or Messi, you know, soccer players. Tiger certainly resonates. LeBron, is Kobe next? Second after that? So you were really surprised at the outpouring or reaction of his sudden and horrific death. Seriously. I'm reading some of these comments and it's like, what don't you get about that? It's not a commentary of who's more important, like his life over a police officer who dies in the line of duty, or Christina Mauser, who unfortunately we now know her name because she was also on board. But celebrity itself, who doesn't fall victim to celebrity? You don't like music? You don't like TV? You don't like movies? Politicians are celebrities. If something horrific happened right now, aside from the president, I mean, the two most high-profile, Mitch McConnell, Adam Schiff, right now, Republican, Democrat. If they died in a car crash just because it wasn't your cup of tea, would you have really been surprised that the world would have kind of stopped for the news coverage and reaction? Seriously? It's just such a terrible, terrible take. It's selfish. It shows a complete lack of understanding. And one in particular, why is all they're talking about on the sports show? The sports shows, you're surprised, are talking about Kobe Bryant dying suddenly in such a horrific way. You really couldn't process that in your little itty-bitty brain. That to me is just astonishing. Now, whether you want to talk about people and how they view Kobe, who was, you know, far from a perfect person, beyond just the documented philanderer, if you're fully aware and you've read the transcripts and follow-up and analysis from the trial in Vail going back now 17 years ago, you realized what happened in that room was horrible, awful. A classic case of didn't go to trial. That doesn't mean it's, you know, sometimes when the judge gavels and gets the verdict from the foreman, not guilty doesn't equate to innocent. So that's a different conversation. But for anybody to be self-involved enough or naive enough and just have, like, completely out of left field, one of the most recognizable people on the planet died like that, and you, why are they really? You really can't. I'll tell you what, for $500,000, answer your own question in essay form and mail it to us. Unbelievable.
I'm not great on those essays.
Me either. It's just, I hate to use the D word, but that's dumb. Self-serving, ignorant, naive, pointless. All right, 284-8571, the Oregon Fuel Injection Hotline, if you want to jump on in. Let's move to the Oregon Fuel Injection Hotline and bring in Josh. Josh, good afternoon. Thanks for calling. How you doing?
Hey, Steve. How's it going? Hey, I wanted to piggyback on what you were saying. I kind of called in and talked about this yesterday, but it's like social media right now is maddening because, I mean, anybody that knows me knows that I'm the biggest Blazer homer in the world, and I've hated on Kobe for...
Ever.
And I've brought up multiple times while he was alive that, you know, the sexual assault case and that kind of stuff, you know, as another reason for hating him. But this whole thing with his daughter and being a father to the daughter and this tragedy and the way this went down, it hit me a little differently. And so, you know, I'd posted, like, you know, stuff on social media about, you know, hey, this, you know, really hits me to the core because of, you know, him having a little girl and I have a little girl and the way this happened. And inevitably, somebody would come in and chime in, oh, so you support a rapist now. Are you supposed? And it's turning into this whole, like, that's not what people are saying. And I think it's less about Kobe Bryant, the human being, and it's Kobe Bryant, the polarizing figure, and he represents memories to a lot of people. And so when people are mourning, just like I would never diminish someone for having, you know, feelings that get brought up because they are survivors of rape. They are survivors. You can't also jump on somebody and go on this crusade because they, Kobe Bryant, because of other feelings in them. People deal with this all differently. And like I said, I hated Kobe Bryant forever, but this whole thing, it's just the connection with his daughter and the other people. It was a hard pill to swallow.
No, I agree. And like I said, for people to be surprised by the international shock and commentary and revealing of emotions, it's like, do you pay attention to anything that happens?
Well, and that's why I said I get to the point where scrolling social media was getting maddening, because you get multiple people. Please, let's not forget Kobe was a rapist. I don't think anybody forgets that. Nobody forgot that.
Right.
That's not what this was about. And it's like less than 24 hours. I mean, eight other people lost their lives. Like, come on. I mean, now we're going to try to pick the bones of Kobe's, you know, past because of that. I just think that it's all in bad form, all in bad taste, and people harping on people because they're sad about a situation, not necessarily a person, but a situation and the way that it went down. I mean, come on. That's a different level of classicness.
No, I agree. Appreciate you chiming in, Josh. 284-8571, the Oregon Fuel Injection Hotline. Let's bring in Ken. Ken, good afternoon. How's it going?
I'm good, Steve. What a crazy weekend, you know, having this happening. The thing for me, and, you know, all these crazy, like you said, the D-word people aside, you know, people lost their lives, and it's tragic any time, as you very well put it, you know, anyone, if there's people in service, but when it's unexpected like this and when it's so abrupt, you know, for me, you know, never meeting or knowing him directly, but, you know, sharing a lot of my life and adolescence growing up, you know, being around the same age, you know, kind of grew up with Kobe. And his life, in a lot of ways, just same ages and things, but watching him and admiring and, you know, having friends who wore the high wristbands and wore the shoes and did all that and idolized this guy. And then later in life, you know, as a young father myself and seeing him and, you know, teaching my kids and showing them his YouTube videos and my son who loves basketball, look, if you want to be better, do these things and listen to his words. So it's been kind of, as a fan, you know, it leaves a big hole in the game. It leaves a big hole kind of in things in it. It's a part of your childhood and kind of adolescence growing up for me that it's like, that wasn't supposed to be taken away. You know what I mean?
No, that's a good point, Ken, and I much appreciate you taking the time to chime in. And for, you know, you always hear when there's a substantial donation made to an athletic department, and it's like, well, why didn't he donate to the academic side? And it's like, because he took the money that he earned or she earned and wanted and donated it to the athletic side, just like nobody tells you how to donate your money. And one of the things that bothers me the most for people who don't understand and I think do a disservice to the true public servants, our police officers and our fire department and those who serve in that capacity. It's like, so you're saying all this and Have you ever contributed to a fundraiser? Do you know who the local fire chief is? Do you have a relationship with the local police department? Have you ever made a contribution? Could you even name a Eugene police officer or a police officer or a fire department member in your town? Or you just want to bash on this kind of overwhelming outpouring just because it might not be your cup of tea? It's not about you. It's about one-on-one, how this person wants to deal with it, how that person wants to deal with it, and nobody asks your, nobody needs your permission. All right, 284-8571, the Oregon Fuel Injection Hotline. We'll take a break. We'll come back. We'll wrap up the 4 o'clock hour of Sports Talk next, 95.3 The Score.
Today's show is brought to you by the Coors Light Frost Brewed Sports Desk, your home for the Coors Light scoreboard and the refreshing tweet of the day. Coors Light, the world's most refreshing beer.
She can run some clock, a full 10, yeah, and she can dribble it away in backcourt, and the Ducks have won in Corvallis. 2010, the last time the Ducks and the Swan in the Civil War in Corvallis, and they get it done again, beating in center court, and Mignon Moore saying, get over here, we need to shake hands.
Terry Johns with the call on the Oregon Sports Network from Learfield IMG College. On a Civil War win, emotional game, emotional day, big victory, first time they've won at Gill. In a decade, and the victory, which we'll talk about that and more with Coach Graves coming up in about 20 minutes, kept the Ducks tied atop the Pac-12 with UCLA and Stanford. Bruins 7-1, as are the other two. Bruins all over. Overall, geez, 18-1. Cardinal 18-2, Ducks 17-2, and they all hit the road, Jack. On Friday, no, wait, the Oregon women are playing Wednesday. I didn't realize that.
Tomorrow?
No, Thursday. Sorry, my bad. I had a Monday flashback just for a second there. Playing Thursday at Utah. And both UCLA and Stanford play at Arizona and Washington, respectively. All right, 284-8571, the Oregon Fuel Injection Hotline. Talk about some games to circle on your calendar, as Oregon has already played and defeated Stanford. They beat Arizona. They lost to Arizona State. And I think they're playing UCLA once on Valentine's Day. That's going to be down in L.A. Yeah, that's for sure. And remember, there's going to be Ducks against Stanford on a Monday, February 24th. And, you know, the Cardinal got that bad boy circled in blood after the way they got ruined here. By Oregon by more than 30 points, that nationally televised game. So just trying to figure out tiebreakers here. And Stanford's lone loss has been to Oregon. UCLA's lone loss, I'm not sure if they've played Stanford yet. I'll have to cheat and go to the website. It looks like, what was today, the 16th? Who the hell beat them? Somebody's cheating. Oh, Stanford beat. Okay, all right, my bad. I've totally dropped the ball on this one. I went to the wrong website. I'm not going to get a lot of UCLA information on cardinal.com. Just, you know, it's the way things work. Cardinal.com, it's not plural, it's a color, dude. The only UCLA loss in conference was at USC. So there, on a technicality via tiebreaker, Oregon is your blue leader As for the men, they don't need tiebreakers. They got the best record in a conference flat out at 6-2. 10 games left, 17-4 overall. They're up to number 11 in the standings. Only Colorado remains ranked. Arizona, you know, played the Ducks really tough here, and, you know, that was that another strong finish. But they're now down tied with ASU, who, after crushing the Sunnies at McHale, Arizona State, with a wild late finish, got revenge. Right now, you have 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. Half the conference, I would say, is done as far as the potential to obtain an at-large bid. Arizona State at 12-7, still a little bit on the outskirts. Arizona joining them a game better at 13-6, but 3-3. Overall, whereas Stanford, USC, Colorado, and Oregon right now with two conference losses, 15, 16, 16, and 18 victories. USC, I'll tell you what, as that team gels, comes together under the guidance of Andy Enfield with that roster, and man, I don't have to tell you guys what we saw here, the upside and the potential and what it took for this really good Oregon team to beat them in double overtime. They've got the potential to not only get one of the top four seeds and a bye, but I think they have the potential to win the conference or win the conference tournament. I don't think I'm being very unrealistic there. Their level of athleticism, pretty strong, to say the least. The problem with USC is they do not support their men's basketball program very well. As a matter of fact, they support him. He chose poorly, but... you think they're a Kung Wu kid is a one-and-done guy? Because he is absolutely an NBA player. I mean, the show he put on here was almost dwarfed by what he did against Oregon State. The numbers a little better against Oregon, but he played 46 minutes. He played about half the game against the Beavs and just went plumb off. All right, we'll take a break. We'll be back 5 o'clock hours next. Our conversation with Coach Graves, 95.3 The Score.
I'm a fun guy.